Hey everyone, welcome to our next edition of Taking Stock. This is going to start a series where we're diving into various trends within consumer products. And I think rightfully so, we're starting with supply chain, where there has been so much change and so much noise over the past few years. And really excited to welcome Scott Shaw, who's been on the show a few times, and Kate Pocknis, who is new to the show. Combined, they have years and years of supply and demand planning experience. And we're going to talk about supply chain resilience. We're going to talk about agility. We're going to talk about supplier diversification. We're going to talk about talent. A lot of things that companies are thinking about historically, but have been certainly exacerbated over the course of the past 24 months due to the global pandemic. So thank you all for listening. I think you'll really enjoy the discussion, and we'll talk to you on the other side. Thanks. Hey, Kate. Hey, Scott. Welcome to Taking Stock. How you both doing?
Good, Steve. Thanks.
Doing well. Thanks, Steve.
So, Scott, is this number two or three for you?
I think it's three.
Wow. I need to maybe like a watch. Or
I was going to say, do I get a pin or a plaque?
I would think maybe a pen. So, go buy yourself a pen.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you for being part of the three-timer club. And Kate, welcome for the first time.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Are you?
I am.
Awesome.
I'm good.
So we have with us here, I won't say the number of years because I don't want to age anyone, but with Kate and Scott, we've got a lot of years of supply chain experience on the podcast here. And really excited that we're going to be able to talk through some of what we've seen in supply chain over the past few months, but really as we are hopefully, knock on a lot of wood, on the back end of the pandemic. There's been so much that we've experienced over the past 24 to 30 months, things that we never thought we would experience. And it's really fascinating cases from a supply chain perspective. So as we are on the tail end of it, Scott, maybe I'll start with you. We'd be curious to hear your thoughts. If there's one thing that perhaps, and companies deploy so many different strategies to deal with the pandemic, but if there's one thing that, looking back, hindsight being 2020, that companies could have done a little bit differently, what is that one thing if you look back over the past, you know, 2.5 years?
Yeah. So, Steve, I think you and I have talked about this previously, that companies plan for what might happen, but it's simply not possible to predict the future, right? So we don't know what sort of events are going to happen. We don't know what sort of disruptions are going to happen. What we can plan for is our ability to respond to whatever disruption that we have, but we can only do that if we know our supply chain well, right? So that's kind of the mantra that I have for supply chain leaders is, know your supply chain, right? Know what your points of flexibility and what your constraints are so that you have thought through and can respond quickly when disruptions do occur.
And is your thinking that perhaps a big lesson learned is that companies realize that perhaps they didn't have visibility into their supply chain the ways in which they should have?
Yeah, that's right. Knowing kind of specific constraints within your manufacturing environment, in your distribution environment, and hugely on your supply side, right? Who are your suppliers? Who are your suppliers' suppliers? Where do your materials come from? It's easy to say, well, hey, I've got a source for this. I've got a great price, and you're locked in, right? Without really understanding, what's behind that and the risk that you may have.
Sure. So, Kate, from your perspective, again, hindsight being 2020, what do you believe that COVID perhaps exposed from a supply chain perspective and kind of things that companies could or should have, or what is one thing that companies could or should have been doing better?
I have to agree with Scott. I've been at companies where they may try to plan for one disaster. If this particular plant goes down, as he said, you don't know what that disaster, that disruption is going to be. So understanding your supply chain and, you know, maybe doing what if scenarios across the board at least gives you a little bit more idea of what's going to happen if something so significant did occur again. So, and I think having the tools, some companies don't have tools that can give them that visibility out 12 to 24 months. So technology, I think, you know, investing in that supply planning piece, that demand planning piece, is definitely a strategy to take.
Yeah. Awesome. So let's focus on perhaps some of the stickiness of the work that had been done during COVID. And by that, there's so much that companies have had to do differently. They've been forced to do differently. I've often said that I thought COVID was the greatest accelerator of trends that we've ever seen in our lifetime, and that things that were on the back burner, things that companies have been contemplating, all of a sudden got accelerated because they just needed to do that. And there's some good associated with that. Obviously, you know, there's nothing good around COVID, but at least it forced companies to do things and think differently in ways that they hadn't been doing previously. So that said, if we think about some of the different changes and or strategies that companies have deployed, what do you think is going to be the stickiest? What changes or new strategies that companies deployed? And Kate, maybe I'll start with you to get your perspective. What is one thing that companies have done differently that you think is going to be the stickiest going forward?
I think a lot more focus on technology, especially supply planning. I didn't realize there were companies in the U.S. that didn't even have such thing as supply planning. They weren't looking forward. And now you have a variety of software tools specifically for supply planning, including demand planning. That, you know, a lot of companies have ERP systems, right? But those aren't planning tools. I think technology, automation as well, you know, can we use robots in some instances to replace, you know, the labor perspective? So I think that's one trend that'll stick.
Yeah, certainly technology investment, and the capabilities that come along with that, is a great learning. Scott, from your perspective?
Yeah, so I'm going to agree with Kate on that, right? And if we narrow in and look just on the demand planning side, right? So I started out by saying, you know, we can't predict the disruptions, we can't predict the future. But demand planning is all about trying to predict the future. We know that when COVID hit, demand went all over the place, right? Some things really spiked, some things fell off the table. And the historical demand planning tools and mindsets that we had didn't really apply. And so we had to look at new ways. And some of those ways require some new technology, and they certainly require some more information, right? So looking closer to the customer and looking on a shorter term basis, right? Because the... You know, in March of 2020, there was no way that we're going to be able to predict what was going to happen in March of 2021, right? We can predict what's going to happen tomorrow and the day after, but only if we've got good information from the customers that are buying from us, and only if we have the ability to take that information, process it, and use it to make decisions on.
Yeah. So we're going to dance around a little bit, and just so everyone kind of understands, and I should have allowed for a more proper introduction, but let's say it simply, Scott has vast experience in a lot of things in and around supply chain, but demand planning is certainly an area of expertise for you, Scott. And Kate, from your perspective, supply planning is a lot of your background and expertise. I'm by no means trying to pigeonhole either of you in that, but I think it's a nice kind of counterbalance. And Scott will be providing some perspective as it relates to the demand side and Kate from the supply side. So much you mentioned, Scott, right? Visibility, right? Right. And the ability to kind of predict the future. Is that, you could argue that's not even possible, right? Companies where they used to try to plan months, years ahead, it is so hard to do now because the world is so changing, even outside of pandemics and global disruptions, things are going to change. Consumer demand is more fickle than ever. There's new brands, new competitors, new retail dynamics, all things that come into play that make it really, really hard to predict demand. That being said, how do companies plan? How do you properly forecast demand when things are so fast changing? Or is it impossible and you just need to have an agility to be able to meet what are going to be continually changing needs?
Yeah, so I'm going to say yes to both answers to that question, Steve, right? It's possible to make predictions. It's impossible to get them right, right? All forecasts are wrong. And therefore, we need to be more agile, right? So there are some things that we can do on the demand planning side. I talked about collaborating with our customers more closely, right? So that we have more information, we kind of shorten the latency of the signal that we're getting from our customers. And then it also gives us a forum to work with our customers on what's going to work best in their stores and all that kind of stuff, right? So it's a win-win when we collaborate with our customers. There are technology solutions that can help us as well, right? There are demand sensing tools that get us closer to the present time. There are things around probabilistic forecasting that instead of saying this is the forecast, it gives a range of probabilities, right? But that range of probabilities introduces a challenge in that, oh gosh, I've got a whole bunch of stuff that can happen. How do I plan for those, right? And so it requires us to be more agile once we recognize which direction demand is actually going to go, right? And it pushes things back onto the supply side of the organization to be able to react and respond.
Yeah, and by the way, great use of the word probabilistic.
I've worked on that.
I'm shocked that I was able to say it. I just focused really carefully to make sure I could get that out. Very nicely done. And it was a nice segue to the supply side. So when I think about demands, I think about, like you said, I think agility, I think the ability to be able to meet changing needs like you just alluded. But when I think about it from the supply side, Kate, I think about resilience. I think about what do you need to do with the supply chain to become more resilient. So what are some of those key steps that you see companies taking as they try to become more resilient?
Well, and to add on to Scott, trying to understand that demand, predict that demand, there's also tools that can help with, supply strategies. There's tools that are specific for safety stock. How do you figure out what's the best balance at your, maybe your sellable item or your component raw material item? There's tools alone just for that. And many of the supply planning software tools today seem to have that as part of their functionality as well. So trying to find that balance, not everybody has all the money and warehouse space to handle all the variability, but at least it's a good starting point, focusing on your key materials, key products, and then really understanding your suppliers. Where do you need to have multiple suppliers in the event your first supplier can't supply? Bringing them local. That's another trend that you see, is that a lot more companies are creating manufacturing companies or facilities in the U.S. You see a lot of biopharma companies, building plants, which is great to see, sourcing from local, machine shops or even farmers. That's one way of making sure your supply chain, you have options and you don't have to get something from across the globe, to make your product.
Yeah. And I so many good ideas and steps there. I can't help but, maybe this is the cynical side of me, but everything that you're shouting about scream, and you're not shouting, I don't know why I use the word shouting, you're talking wonderfully. Everything that you're speaking about is screams cost to me. Right. These are incremental costs that companies need to make, whether it's diversifying your supply network, whether it's sourcing locally versus globally, whether it's potentially carrying increased safety stocks, which flies in the face of, and again, this is me being cynical, of where companies and supply chains were heading, which was becoming more lean, just-in-time manufacturing, all things to essentially make sure that we were being as profitable and efficient and optimized in our supply chain as possible. And Scott, how could those two worlds coexist? How do you be lean, efficient, but also focus on resilience and safety?
Yeah, so I think you're pushing my buttons on that one, Steve, right? So a lot of the news stories around, lean and just-in-time inventory got us into this problem, right? Companies didn't have enough inventory so that when ships were delayed, they couldn't make anything. My perspective is that then you had a very poor implementation of lean, right? Lean is not just cut your inventory in half. Lean is do significant work on your supply chain to make sure that product flows, right? And it gets into things like supplier diversification and nearshoring. And when you read the lean literature, right, it talks about setting up a network of suppliers that are close by, right? So it is possible to operate in a lean environment and manage your risk. It's not simple. And I think a lot of the problems that we had with lean and JIT were because people tried to be simple about it and say, well, heck, I can just get twice as many deliveries and cut my inventory in half.
Sure. Kate, would you agree with that?
Yes. Yes, I agree. Okay. And really, if you want to take it to the next step, you know, giving visibility or building those supplier relationships, you know, giving them your suppliers a 12 to 24 month forecast of what you think you may need. So they not just submitting POs 2 to 3 months out in advance, but yeah, I think it's a fine, it's complicated. It's safe average or the normal safety stock calculation. Yes, you can find that online, but a lot of these tools have a lot more algorithms built in to help get to that lean, right? Because we know we can't just use cost and have a ton of money to invest.
Yeah, and it's, I think I'm preaching in the choir here, but so much of this is about process, right? Because they think about, you know, all the inputs from your initial sales forecast to your demand plan to your supply plan. We see a lot of companies just lack that cross-functional collaboration. They don't have the right disciplines in place to ensure that there's the right visibility throughout and there's the right owners of different steps of that forecast. And I think, Scott, that's what you're alluding to, right? That often they might feel as if they've got lean or just in time in place, but they don't necessarily have the right processes in place to really execute that effectively.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You have to be able to, measure your performance and understand the signals that are coming from your supply chain and be able to react immediately in order to leverage the benefits that lean will give you.
I want to talk a little bit about talent, if we can. If you think about just the market today across the globe, there are huge constraints as it relates to talent and the capabilities as processes evolve, as systems evolve, like you talked about, Kate. What are some of the challenges and opportunities that companies are facing as it relates to talent? Specifically, Kate, from a supply perspective, and then Scott, from your perspective in and around demand. But where do you see companies investing? Where do they need to invest to ensure that they've got the right capabilities in place?
I think any company, especially with COVID, they have to think differently, for one, when attracting talent, trying to keep that talent, reskilling them. Thinking of new ways of working, you know, as the generations go through, you know, that 8 to 5 sitting at a desk Monday through Friday is going to change, now that we're used to remote work or hybrid. So I think investing in employees, giving them training throughout their career. Something you see often in supply planning is there's a lot of tribal knowledge, they'll call it, in their head when it comes to planning an item or knowing a product. You know, get as much as you can into a tool, investing into a tool, having a tool doing 80% of the planning, and then a supply planner understanding that tool, you know, that's a knowledge, it's a skill they then have, and then managing the 20% of the exceptions so that if an employee does move on to another role, you know, you should have a majority of that information within the tool, and it's not that tribal knowledge walking out the door. So I think, you know, investing in the technology and then one, the retraining, keeping the employees continually learning throughout their.
Yeah. And so Scott, from your perspective, building upon that, based upon some of what you had shared earlier, I would have to think more of an analytical mindset.
Yeah,
probably needs to permeate through this organization. So talk a little bit about that from your perspective. And is that just a capability or those tools? How does that relate to talent?
No, that's totally right. So there's a lot more math, right, in supply chain planning than there used to be. And a lot of it is kept within tool sets, right? There are complicated algorithms. But if we as practitioners don't understand what the machine is doing, right, that black box mentality gets us into trouble. Having that analytical approach and the analytical chops within your organization to be able to understand how your tool sets are working, understand the data that you have and that you're providing to your demand and supply planning organizations makes a giant difference.
Yeah. Thank you both for that. Let me close on a final question, and Scott, I'll let you take a swing at it. We talk a lot about supply chain resilience, and companies need to become more resilient, right? Mm-hmm. They need to become more agile, more resilient. How do you measure it? How do companies, and this is maybe a little bit of an opportunity for a plug as well, but how do you, if you're a company and you're listening to this and you're thinking, okay, this is something we need to improve on, how do you understand kind of where you are and where you need to potentially improve? Where do you start that
right.
effort?
Right. And it's hard, right? So, cause resilience is a squishy term. We define resilience as ability to resist and respond to disruptions, right? There's a period of time that you can resist a disruption. That period of time typically gives you time to pivot to a response if the disruption is something that is going to continue. So having the ability to resist gets into some of that visibility that we talked about. It gets into your inventory and supply strategies. And then the ability to respond is more around your organizational capabilities, right? The ability to make decisions, to get the right people at the table, and the cultural muscle that allows you to make tough decisions quickly and pivot, right? And it is all undergirded by the talent that Kate talked about, right? That you have to have smart, knowledgeable, analytical people available within your organization.
Yeah, and I think I think you mentioned that tribal knowledge, Kate. It's a fine line, right? You need the tools, you need the analytical capabilities, but there's still always going to be a good amount of art associated with whether it's demand or supply planning, right? You need that understanding of, you know, historical performance, unique business dynamics, unique kind of inputs that maybe you're not just going to get out of a system that an analytical tool isn't going to spit out for you, right? So I don't think we should ever lose that tribal knowledge. It's just complementing it with increased capabilities.
Yeah, and a tool will never, you know, can never replace your team, right? You know, you definitely need to have the right number of people based on, you know, your product line and the number of items that you're selling. You still need that, those people doing it, but the tool can just help them make better decisions faster.
I thank you both very much for the conversation. We chatted earlier. We could probably spend the next couple hours together, but you could be like Scott, Kate, and just crash this, you know, every few months and be a continual participant. But in all seriousness, I appreciate you both spending a little bit of time sharing your perspectives. I think really valuable insight for the group, and look forward to catching up again soon.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Thanks, both. All right. So thank you, everyone, for joining our discussion with Scott and Kate. Appreciate you taking the time to listen in. And Scott and Kate, especially, thank you for your participation and the great perspective that you shared. You know, I gave Scott an opportunity, and he is a pretty humble guy, so he didn't want to talk about the supply chain resilient assessment tool that we've been developing with our clients. We think it's a great opportunity for companies to kind of better understand areas of risk that might not be obvious to them and help kind of formulate what your strategy should be going forward. So look out for some more information about that. But again, it is critical for companies to understand how they become more resilient, how they become more agile, and how they become more responsive. So again, thank you, everyone, for listening. Scott, Kate, thanks for the participation. And as I mentioned earlier, we've got some great sessions coming up around other areas of the business as it relates to supply chain, as it relates to marketing, as it relates to sales, as it relates to talent. So appreciate your continued support of our podcast, and we'll talk soon. Thanks.